the nicest weekend in, you know, a whole year or something like that. So I appreciate that you're here. I love seeing you. And I just want to mention before I really get rolling here, I know our youth pastor. Like, you know, he's my friend. You know, Andy, they call him Andy White. He was just up here showcasing the John. So let me tell you just a little bit about Andy, okay? Andy has a job, right? Lots of you guys have jobs, right? And Andy gets up at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to go to his job every day, where that he works full time, and sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. And then at the end of his day, he comes home, and then he hammers away at youth stuff. He's moving toilets, he's taking calls, he's pranking people, he's getting ready to set up for Wednesday night, he's teaching stuff, you know. I mean, I love the traveling toilet thing, but it would be really, really cool if we could just kind of just cap that thing off and put an end to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to nip this thing in the bud before that thing makes it to my lawn. It hasn't been to my lawn, and I'm thinking maybe somehow I'm going to get away with it. And so back of the room, they have that board with all the little envelopes. You know what? The biggest envelope on there is a $20 bill. And I'm not quite sure I can say this for sure, but I'm pretty sure if we wiped out the envelopes on that board, that would pretty close to kind of just, that would just put an end to it, and they would have succeeded. They would have made their goal. And so I'm just asking you, before I really get rolling, would you please consider just picking up one of those envelopes, putting your stash in, put it in the jar, and let's just shut this thing down before it comes to my house. So, all right, listen. Listen, it's Memorial Day tomorrow, right? And we have been setting aside Memorial Day for a long, long time. It started in 1868, a little while after the Civil War ended, and it was meant to be a sobering day where we would remember the lives that were given for the American cause. And we've been doing that a long time, and I hope that you take a little time to, even in the barbecues and the travel and all that kind of stuff, to really remember and think that, yes, somebody actually gave their life. They set their life down so that this thing we call America can continue. And many, many people over many, many generations have done that to make that possible. And I just want to say that Memorial Day, it's a sobering holiday, right? It's a sobering thing. There are lots of holidays we have. Some of them are just kind of, eh, and some of them are, you know, exciting and fun, and you wind up to them to get to them, and then it's like a big cannon goes off. But this is a sobering kind of a thing, right? Anytime you really let yourself think about death, it will really get the wheels turning, and it will kind of quiet you. It'll slow you down. I was having lunch with a friend one time, and we were talking about this, and it was pretty recently, and they remembered there was this poem that went on in the 90s. It was called The Dash, and it became popular on radio and spread. And the whole thing was that, I'm not going to read you the poem, but the whole thing was that there are really, at the end of your life, on a stone someplace, there are going to be 2 days. There's going to be a birthday, and then there's going to be your last day. And then in between, there's this line, a hyphen, a dash. And everything, see, the two days really aren't that important, right? But everything a person has ever thought, everything a person will ever laugh at, cry at, say, think, do for somebody, make time for, everything that a person will ever do that really makes up what you think of as your life is going to get summed up by a little horizontal line. And if you really let yourself think about that, I'll tell you what I think. I think, man, I want my dash to count. I sure hope my dash counts for something. I sure hope by the end of my life, you know, that little dash, if that's all there's going to be, boy, oh, that dash really meant something to somebody. I was talking to that same friend, and they were talking a little bit about an experience they had at Regroup, and one of the questions at the tables was, what do you think that God's purpose for your life is? And I'm not going to tell you what was it, but he just said, you know, at the moment, I just had to be honest. I don't know. I'm not really sure. I mean, to be honest, right now, I'm not really sure what my exact purpose in life is. But I guess he went home and he thought about it, and it didn't just go away. It bothered him enough, you know, he didn't have an answer for that. And so he thought about it, and what he told me was, you know, I really want to think that somehow the world around me was better off because I was here. That people were better off because I lived my life. That they have a reason to think that that was a loss, that I was gone, that I made a contribution and it was for good, not the other way. You know what I said? I said, yeah, I think me too, right? Is that what we want? Is that what we want to think? We want to think we put a dent in the world. We want to think we made it better, that God used us to do something that had a lasting benefit beyond just our short time here. I think at some point we all want to think we were some kind of a difference maker, a world changer. I want my dash to count. But here's the thing. Life's hard, isn't it? Isn't life hard? It can be. Not all the time. But it seems like if you set out to put a dent in the world and make the difference for somebody or some somebodies, you want to let God use you to make things better, to change history for the good for somebody, so that somebody can trace back and say, man, if they hadn't done that, I don't know where we would be. I don't know where I would be. If you set out to do that, sometimes it gets harder. Sometimes it seems like life can get harder. Sometimes if you set out to do the good thing, do the right thing, you're going to take some flack for it. Because it seems like the world, it's almost like the world is perfectly content not getting any better. It really would be happier if you just didn't try and mess with it, right? Doesn't it seem like that? Doesn't it seem like the world would just kind of prefer to be left alone? You know what, difference maker? Why don't you let me go back to bed? I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to sleep in today. And why don't you just go pay attention to your own stuff? If you set out, I mean, think of some of the people that you have admired most starting in elementary class when you look back in history. You know, the Martin Luther Kings and the JFKs and the Abraham Lincolns of the world. Think about some of those people just from our own American history. Those were people that had to push through serious resistance. They had to go at the long haul. Those are people that got tired. Those are people that sweated and they took criticism and they took judgment and they took flack and they took physical violence against them. Some of them met their end because of what they stood for. And I just want to be kind of sober for a moment and just stand and realize, you know what? Making a difference has a cost to it. And it can be very hard at times. And that's what I want to speak to today. I want to speak to you who may be kind of tired, that have been trying to do the right thing, trying to do the Jesus thing, trying to stay faithful and faithful and faithful. You reach out to people, you encourage people, you share your experience with people about what God has done in your life. And sometimes it looks great, and sometimes there are just great results from that, and you can identify them and see them. But sometimes you go through seasons where it just seems like forever since you had any real inspiration to keep going, any real motivation to keep on trucking. How do you push through that? How do you push through when the going does get tough? That's what I want to talk about today. And what I want to do is just draw your attention to a little old letter, okay? It's called Hebrews. It's in our New Testament. And Hebrews was a letter written for Jewish people that had become Christians. That's what they called Jewish people. They called them Hebrews. That's kind of their national title, right? And the Jewish people were scattered all over the place. They were definitely in what we now think of as Judah and Israel, but they were all over the Roman Empire. They're scattered around. And And there were people in Jewish people in Rome and Jewish people in Antioch and all those different ancient cities, most of them you've never heard of. And this letter is just kind of an open letter written by an early church leader to those people, those Jewish people specifically, that had chosen to follow this new Jesus movement, that believed this Jesus really did do what he said he would do and actually rise from the dead and be the atonement for people's sins for all time. They actually believed that he had done that. And so they jumped in the Jesus boat full steam ahead. And here's the thing, though. What you probably don't know is how much flack and how exhausting that might be over time. You see, because when you were Jewish and you decided, you know what, this really is the sent one from God, this must be the Messiah, you were blasphemous. You were blasphemous. Your family would disown you. You would, if you had a job, you might lose your job. If you had a business, you were an entrepreneur of some kind, a fisher guy, a marketplace guy, it very well might be that people wouldn't do business with you anymore. But it would get worse. At some point, somebody might try and trump up some charges against you to get you thrown in jail because they hated you so much because of what you stood for. Dad might get hauled off to jail to sit in a dirt prison cell somewhere. And instead of being a support and a help to the family, now the family's got to figure out some way to support him in jail, or else he's not going to get food, he's not going to get water, he's not going to get what he needs. And your family would be at home and you'd sit in that jail cell thinking about, wow, now I'm just a burden. It was tough. And so he writes this letter. We don't exactly know which leader it was, but we know it was a church leader, and he writes this letter. And we're in Hebrews 12. And by the time we get to Hebrews 12, the writer has made this big, long list of people, famous people to these Jews, famous faith leaders, famous movers and shakers in their history, people that they would all know. The stories were passed on from generation to generation. They were so familiar with all these people, people like Abraham and Moses and Isaac and Noah and all these big movers and shakers, people that really made a dent with their dash. And nobody could say anything, nobody could deny it, because their history had been built by the choices of these men to be faithful to God, even though things got really, really hard and really, really tiring over time. And so he calls all these people to their attention, the Abrahams and the Moseses and the various people, the Noahs and the Isaacs, and all those faithful people, not perfect people, not flawless people, but people that chose to keep going when it got hard to keep going. And this is what he writes after he lists all those people. He says, therefore, 12:1, Hebrews 12:1, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, a whole bunch of people in history that are accompanying us, such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. He's saying, listen, ladies and gents, think of your life as a race. Think of it as a race. I'm not talking about the kind of race where you got to get there before somebody else gets there, okay? That's not the point of this race. This is an endurance race. It's got a couple of things that all races have. It's got a path that's been marked out for you. And it's got a finish line. And you should think about your life as a race, as something that has a goal at the end of it, but there's been a path marked out. And really, you've only got two things to do to win at this race. Stay on the path and keep going. You got to stay on the path, but you got to keep going. And there's a little bit of strategy to this that he gives to us. He says, just in this first line, he says, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, so that we can run with perseverance, not stopping, keeping on going, throwing off everything. What's that mean? It basically means if it's not helping you run, chuck it. If it's weighing you down, if it's not helping you get faster, if it's not helping you stay on the path, then get rid of it. It may not seem overtly sinful or particularly evil, but if it's not helping you focus on the one thing that you want to accomplish at the end of your life, which is across the finish line, and hear that, well done, then chuck it. It's just slowing you down. There are situations at times I know that we sometimes put ourselves in a place where we think, if I would just add, you know, I could add this thing to my life and it wouldn't do me any harm. It's just kind of a neutral thing. I like, yeah, I'll just add this to my life. But sometimes addition is really subtraction. Have you ever noticed that? Sometimes, maybe you've at some point thought, you're like, you know, man, I just, it'd be so cool if we had this thing. And I know I can't really afford it. I don't feel like I can afford it. But if we just added this, you know, the family would get so much out of this. You know, I don't know. I mean, I've done it. I bought an old car one time. It's still sitting in my garage. I'm still trying to sell it. Okay. It's going to cost. I don't know if I can really afford this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Just because, you know, you get this vision of how good it's going to be, right? And then you get into it, and then you realize it's really expensive. And it's going to take a lot of time, and you start spending your nights thinking, you know, oh, how am I going to pick up enough hours to cover the extra? And how am I going to convince my boss to give me some more overtime? And how am I going to find the time on the weekends in order to, you know, fix this thing? And it just always needs something, right? It always needs something. And pretty soon you're realizing that the very thing you thought would get better is actually being pulled away from. It's being sapped. You know, I thought we were going to have all these great times with my family, and now it's like, yeah, I got to work all this time in order to make more money to pay for the thing. I don't really have any time for my family anymore. See, it can be a lot like that with our spiritual lives, our very real lives that we're living. Sometimes we have things, and we include them, and we think, yeah, this is a good thing. I'd like to do this, so you put it in. You know, you have a little enjoyment, and people should have enjoyment. We should enjoy life. Should take rest, right? We should rest. You better rest. I'm telling you right now. Don't misread me. You better rest or you're going to burn out. But sometimes we have things that we build in and they're really not helping us run harder or faster or grow more spiritually. They're just kind of absorbing our time. They're not really helping us reach out to somebody. They're not really helping us encourage somebody. They're not really helping us be more likely to share our experience or avoid temptation. They're really just kind of soaking up energy, soaking up time. And I think what he's saying here is that, number one, there's a strategy you need in your life if you want to run this race successfully and you want to keep going. He's throw off the dead weight. Throw off the stuff that isn't helping you go further and helping you grow stronger. Throw it off. It's just in your way. Simplify. Simplify. If it ain't helping you, chuck it. Toss it. Cast it out. But there's more. How many of you know, if you're a runner, if you're any kind of an athlete, you don't just need a good strategy, right? It's not just about strategy. You know, when you're running and your muscles are aching and every breath that you inhale is causing you pain in the lungs. You know what I'm talking? Some of you are runners, okay? There comes a point where you're like, you know, and you realize that is actually just making things ache more, and you're like, I don't want to do this. You know, I'm just telling you right now, I'm not a runner. There's a reason I'm not a runner. I do not enjoy running. I mean, I enjoy thinking I can get away from a bear, you know, if it's coming after me in the woods, but honestly, you know, the rest of the time, if this is not on a needed basis, I'm probably not going to do this thing, okay? Now, for some other reason, I could do other stuff, weightlifting, but I don't know, running just doesn't speak to me, okay? And so, when you are a runner, there comes a point where, you know, you've got your heart monitor on. It's a really good one, and you're monitoring your beats to get better, and you're timing yourself, and you're changing your terrains, and you've read magazine articles from great runners, and you're doing all the right stuff. And it really doesn't matter at the moment where you are dragging for a breath. You're like, you know, and you feel like your chest is going to just like burst open for the extra air that it needs, and you're just going to collapse on your back and lay there. You know, there's something more that's needed. You need a motivation. This strategy thing, this simplify thing will help you, but there's more. You need a motivation that will carry you through that moment when everything would be so much better if you just quit. This is what the writer says. He says, "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith." If anybody knows, if anybody can help you do this, it's Jesus. He's the author and perfecter of this faithful life thing. He created the thing. He created the faith thing. He knows. And it says, "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." Man, I start to get tired. I start to wimp out when I just pour myself into somebody or something for a while, and then a little more, and a little more, and I don't see results right away. I get tired when I get criticism, when I get flack, when people kind of slap me across the face for saying something helpful or trying to do the right thing or trying to help. Man, I get tired. This is somebody that does not get tired from that. This is somebody that knows. This is somebody that has faced down the ultimate trouble for doing the good that they did. This is somebody that goes above and beyond anything any other world changer seems to have done. He knows, and he's done it. And the writer says, consider him. When you start to get tired, and you start to slow down, and you start to have your doubts and your questions, and you wonder, is there even any point to this? Should I even keep trying? He's saying, fix your eyes on this guy. Fix your eyes on Jesus, who did the most impossible, imaginable thing. He didn't deserve the death, but he walked face forward into it, knowing it was coming, and took it, because he was going to open up an opportunity like had never been opened up before. And if you're like me, you think, yeah, but that's Jesus. I'm not Jesus. That's Jesus. If you didn't notice, Jesus can do miracles, and he can, you know, part seas, and he can make people come back from the dead, and he's got this long list of things that he can do that I cannot do. I'm thinking Jesus is in a, you know, some kind of a class that I can never approach. You know, how would I ever come up to anything like that? And the secret, I'm going to tell you a secret today. Are you ready? There's a secret. It's hidden in plain sight. Go back to that first line. Let us fix our eyes right there. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who, for the joy set before him, who for the joy set before him. There was a motivation that he had. What was it? A ticket to heaven? Well, he's already going to heaven. That's where he came from. That's what we're talking. I mean, he started there anyway. And I'm pretty sure the joy set before him was not that crucifixion cross. Ain't nobody confused about that. So what could that joy have been? You. You. You are the joy. You were the joy. You were the motivation that the God-man locked onto as he faced down carrying that cross, as he faced down the torture and punishment of having his skin ripped off, ripped to shreds by the cat of nine tails. You were the motivation that was enough. Imagine that. You were the motivation that was enough. He had a vision of the opportunity that every single one of us might have ever onward to be able to say, yes, I want to be the Father's son. Yes, I want to be one of the king's daughters. Yes, I want to give my life. I want to be about God's business. I want to give myself over. I want to belong to his family like I was always meant to. Yes, you were the motivation, the opportunity for you to be able to say yes one day and know that many people would. That was what he had locked onto. I want to say something that's just of myself that I've noticed related to this. I've seen a lot of self-help stuff, right? SoulView. You know, it starts at memes on Instagram, you know, positive, encouraging stuff, and it goes all the way to Joel Osteen, and, you know, your best life now, you know, you want to be the best you can be, and, you know, you want to envision the you that you've always wanted to be, and you want to, you know, get power from that and get motivated by that. I want to tell you something I firmly believe. You can't prove this on paper or look at it, but listen to me. I'm just going to talk about it like it's truth. When things get hard, your desire to self-actualize will not be enough. It will not be enough. Your desire to be better than you were yesterday, just because you want to be the best you, won't be enough. Your desire to leave behind the addiction that you've always had, I don't think it's enough. You can read all the books you want. Probably read a bunch of them if you're a reader. A lot of them out there, but it won't be enough. But I tell you what can be enough. There's something very, very powerful about knowing that somebody else's future hinges on whether or not you hold on or not. There's something very, very powerful there. There's something extremely potent about knowing that there is a somebody out there that is absolutely, unequivocally counting on you to pull through the flack and the judgment and the criticism and the trouble. And my gosh, they may even give you the trouble themselves. It doesn't matter. It can come from any place, any time. I mean, it can be just exhaustion. It can be a combination of trouble people bring to you, or just resistance, or it could just be life is tough. But there is a somebody. If there is a somebody out there that you know is absolutely counting on you to make it and to have faith. Somebody to reach out and encourage them when nobody else is encouraging them. Somebody to reach out and forgive them when nobody else has been willing to forgive them. If there's a somebody out there that you know is just counting on you, nobody else is going to do this for them. Nobody else is going to invite them in. Nobody else is going to reach for them. Nobody else is going to share their experience with God. Except when you know that, that'll drive you through just about anything if you really believe that's true. I used to tell stories in the news about the moms that could lift a car suddenly to save a child that was trapped underneath. You ever remember hearing about that stuff? Physically impossible, right? Mom has an accident, or there's been an accident, looks down and sees their baby. And if something doesn't happen, they're going to die. All of a sudden, mom's got muscles. Mom's got muscles she didn't know she had. And there really are times, there really are times when impossible things are done by ordinary people. And the only thing that could possibly drive them is to know somebody's future counts on my decision to keep saying, yes, I will do the faithful thing. I will do the good thing. It hurts. I'm tired. And if it was just for me, it wouldn't be enough. I couldn't do it anymore. But I will do the faithful thing because I know they are counting on me. And so I just want to ask you, in case you are feeling a little bit tired, in case you are getting a little ragged, a little frazzled, a little rough around the edges, and I don't want to downplay for a moment some of the stuff that you guys and everyday people go through. The abuse, betrayals, criticisms, judgment. I'm not just talking emotional abuse. I mean, long years of emotional abuse. I'm talking physical abuse, just violence, just physical violence. People have stolen things from you and continue to try, and you're always looking. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that can happen. Even when you try to do the right thing and the good thing, and it seems like you get slapped around for it. If that's you, I don't want to downplay that at all, because that's real. But I would ask you this question. Whose future, whose life is hanging in the balance? If you need a refresher, who is hanging in the balance? I got a little letter I want to read. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'll just be real with you. About a year and a half ago or so, I think it was, I was getting tired. Okay, I'm just going to be honest. I was getting tired. It's not that I didn't, want to do my job. I love my job, and it's not that I don't want to help people. I love to help people. But there was a season where I felt like I'm just trying as hard as I can all the time, and I'm looking for God to fill in the gaps, the margin. I reach the end of myself, and then I look for Him to do stuff, and that's how I feel we should be, right? And so I was working as hard as I could at those things and trying to get the balance, the family at home and the work and the extended family and trying to get that right and be a help to the community. And you think about these things maybe a little more even as a pastor, you're just more a little conscious of it because people come at you with stuff. And so I was getting a little tired. I was just getting tired, and I said, oh my gosh. Could I bring in a stunt double just for a month or two? Just like a stunt double to come in and people would know, and then I could just go take a break, just take a rest. And I was getting tired, and then somebody wrote this letter to Mike, actually, wrote this letter, and I asked them if it would be okay if I read some of this, so don't think I do this all the time. And just bear with me, it'd take me a minute. As a child, I grew up in a home where there was abuse, both physical and emotional. At a very young age, I had wanted a father's love. Because I didn't have it at home, I tried finding it other places. As an adult, I attempted that relationship with my father-in-law. It seemed I would always be fatherless. I was a victim of disease, emotional, physical abuse, and rape. I struggled to be okay. I attended Catholic school and church. I felt lost and often unloved there as well. When I had my children, I attended a few other churches, none of which had made me feel wanted. In fact, it was just more places where I went unnoticed. Such a lonely place. My husband, myself, and children faced serious health battles. I began looking for God. What I found was not working. As I began using all kinds of things, crystals and books written by psychics and the like. 2 years ago, I entered the most difficult situation I'd ever been in. Most days I felt lost and my life felt dark. I'd been grieving and searching for someone or something to save me. If I had I'd prayed to this God many times, but it always felt empty and hollow. Maybe God didn't notice me either. My entire life, I've taken care of myself. This is for Mike, not me. She said, when I came through your office door, you said the shortest sentence in the Bible was Jesus wept and my walls came down. I've held on to that ever since. Bible study began a journey I will never forget. I began going to church. It was my weekly peace. James was speaking that day, and he spoke to me. No, we didn't have eye contact, and he didn't really speak to my face, but I felt for the first time ever a sense that the message was for me. I can't really put that into an easy way to understand. All I know is that I felt noticed and loved. In between study and church and regroup, I believe I am healing. God used you and James and the church to save me. Please know the path the church is on has brought me to God. I have finally accepted God. You asked during the church if anyone had accepted Christ that day to let you know, and with this letter, I am. There are days when I go into the office and I'm kind of like, okay, you know, I got to pump myself up. You know, I got stuff to do. I got to get some stuff done. And by the end of the day, I get tired. You know, I get tired and I go home and then I got to work some more because I didn't get quite enough done. And I'm, you know, getting up on Saturday morning at like 4 o'clock to finish up my message and then doing my slides later and trying to fit the, you know, working on the house in between. There are days you get tired. If I got a letter like that every week, I could do this all day long. I could do this all day long. And I've been praying ever since, God, if there would just be one story like that every week, if just one person every week would somehow get a story like that started through what we do here, I could do this all day long. I'll preach 5 services. I don't care. You know what? Under normal circumstances, I can go home, and after this, I'm just telling you, I'm really tired. And I just, sometimes I just like, you know, I eat a little bit here, and then I go home, and I'm just like, boom, you know, and you hear the boom from downstairs. It's my face hitting the mattress, and I try to do a little 30-minute thing, you know. But I'm telling you what, I could do services all Sunday long. And I'm telling you what, it is just something about realizing that there's something God has given you to do that's actually going to make the difference for somebody. And I'm not claiming all that. I didn't share that with you to make myself feel special. Just a part of it. Just a part. There's something about that. It'll wake you right up. I don't need coffee anymore when I read that letter. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's build an awesome church. Yeah. Amen. You know somebody that wants to be welcomed, actually feel that God loves them and experience what it's like to be really, actually, genuinely wanted? Let me tell you, you invite them to this church. You invite that person to this church. And they'll be talked to by a ton of people, and they'll be, they'll never realize what they've been missing. I'm so proud of the people that serve here. It's genuine. They love people. It's not like a hoax. Enough about that for right now. Whose story is hanging in your balance? Whose story is hanging in your balance? Do you have somebody under your own roof that's watching you to see if you'll pull through whatever your challenge is? A spouse or a child? Your parents? Is there somebody that you haven't even identified yet? Is somebody out there? You haven't even met them yet. They're absolutely counting on a word from you or an invitation from you or a something from you that they haven't yet gotten from anybody else. And God's intention is to use you. And it's just really a question of will you say yes one more time? Is there somebody you're just starting to get acquainted with right now? Somebody at work, somebody at school, college, high school, elementary, whatever it is. Is there somebody out there? And you know, when you get into work or school or wherever it is you're going, the post office, I don't know where you go, the mechanic, I don't know. Is there somebody there that is really just kind of waiting? And your heart, you know. Because you notice them. And you think about it and you think, I wonder if that person knows how much God really does actually love them. I wonder if that person knows that their future could be so much brighter There's so much more to it. I wonder. And every time you see him, just you wonder a little bit. I don't know. Maybe I can invite him. Maybe I could encourage him. Maybe I could just pray for him. Ask him if anybody ever prayed for him about that thing that they're suffering, that I know they're suffering. Just listen. Maybe nobody ever has listened. A lot of that going around, isn't there? Whose life have you locked onto? What vision have you locked onto for the future of the next guy? That will do a lot. And the pattern is, that's exactly what Jesus did. See, it's not just about us. When you become a Christian, it becomes about everybody else. That's what it is to love God. You love people. Jesus said it was like, I'll quote this. It's like loving God to love people. That's what that old scripture from Deuteronomy meant. That we so often, the greatest commandment, you know, love the Lord God, the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second greatest commandment is like it. The second greatest commandment is like it. It's a parallel. You can't do one and not the other. You can't love God without loving people because he loves people. And if you don't love what he loves, how do you love him? See, there's nothing wrong with that motivation. Let me pray for you. Lord, I just ask today, Lord, that we would really focus, we would really fix our eyes, like the writer said, fix our eyes on you, Jesus. And remember that if anybody knows how to push through and make the dash count, it's you. You came up with this. You came up with this. You know exactly what it takes, and then you modeled it for us. You modeled it for us, Lord. And I just ask, you would just give us a dose, a little nudge, a little something, a little power, Lord, to be inspired by that today. Beyond ourselves, beyond what we can pump ourselves up to, Lord, that you would help us to really see that for what it is, Lord, and that you would help us to latch on, because there's a future. There's a future. There's a difference that's going to be made. People will come to faith and confidence in you, or they won't, depending on whether we will keep going. God, I pray you put it in us. Help us persevere. Help us run this race and keep going. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Well, I appreciate, again, one more time, all of you, and don't forget, please, to set aside some time tomorrow. Just set aside some time and ponder everything that's been given by so many over the years. I just want to draw your attention. Remember, please, that envelope board back there, would you please clean that thing off? I do not want that toilet at my house, okay? I got enough problems at home fixing up stuff. I don't want that toilet in front of my house, okay? My lawn's been going a while, and the neighbors are starting to wonder. So please clean off that envelope board and send these kids to Kingdom Bound. They're going to have the time of their lives. I went a long, long time ago. I still remember it. 1997, I think. Something like that. So, yeah, it makes a difference. Send these kids on their way.